Welcome to AmGo Podcast 9.12. A lot of things get called out in this podcast, including my mom. Dance for me, Ace and Bender.
I refuse.
Oh, you said you would.
I know, I lied.
You said you would. You specifically said that I was the only person who could make you dance.
Yeah.
So I decided I would be the puppet master.
Yeah, we didn't win yet. I mean, maybe if we'd won, you know, I would have been in the dancing mood.
Well, you wouldn't have to say that on Twitter.
Yeah, that's true.
If we won.
Yeah. But, yeah, I wouldn't have to get all.
Did you like my puppet master laugh?
It was very puppet mastery.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I pull these strings.
Oh no, we're getting the accents now.
that's like a that's actually a direct reference to an Ed Wood movie with Bela Lugosi. So it's my Bela Lugosi impression, and okay. I think that's where the laugh comes from. It was a long time ago. I wasn't like the guy who was into Ed Wood, but my friends were into Ed Wood, so they showed me this thing.
Okay.
It's a very strange movie. It's not Plan 9. It's something else. But anyway, football happened. And we got to talk about it.
Yeah, we do.
But it's kind of like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know what people expected when, you know, Brandon Peters goes out of the game with a pretty scary injury.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing where, like, people are mad about this game. But, like, you know, they're winning this. And then they fall behind by a score, and then Brandon Peters gets knocked out.
And I mean, at that point,
that's the game.
It's like 14-10, and it really probably should be 17-7 Michigan.
Yeah.
Because they have a touchdown taken off the board, well, not put on the board by the replay official, when it does look like DPJ got
his left foot was down like a fraction of a second before the right hits out of bounds. And it's one of those where you can kind of understand why it stands on a replay, but at the same time, like, what's the point of the super slow-mo if you're not going to use it?
Right, like there's a still shot of 1 foot down and 1 foot up.
And that's, like, pretty definitive.
Right, yeah. It's like, so that's a touchdown taken off the board, and then they get this weird punt return touchdown when Ambry Thomas is shoved from behind and goes
to
the
ground. Yeah,
that
wasn't great.
But that's not like legal.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's what I'm saying, is it wasn't great on the official's part. There was also some, like, pretty poor coverage beyond
Michigan,
but you would like to get the first guy in who's got a clean shot to not get pushed past him illegally.
You see the ball hit the ground, and you're like, okay, well, Ambry's going to down it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ambry
suddenly he's flying past the football because he does not have control over his body.
And I don't know why they don't call that. I mean, I guess because they're like, oh, the ball hit the ground, so we don't have to call any penalties on this.
And, of course, it has to be frickin' Hoodie Guy who brings it back.
Hoodie Guy. They both wore hoodies, both cornerbacks for Wisconsin.
They
disgusting.
Did.
Disgusting hoodie people. People are like,
you're from Wisconsin. You got to be able to tough that out.
Michigan's, they're probably not from Wisconsin.
That's true. One of them is a Hawaii transfer.
Right. The other one is also not like a white dude who looks like a cheese curd, so probably not from Wisconsin.
You know.
I guess there's Milwaukee. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, man.
We're
it's
gonna,
one of these podcasts.
Yeah, where we go far out of our way to not actually talk about the game.
Yeah, one of these podcasts. I mean, I don't know if Michigan would have won this game with Peters in, but they obviously had a much better chance. And there's a way that, you know, this game comes out. I mean, they dominated the first 40 minutes of this game. Until, like, the drive where Hornibrook starts just dropping absolute dimes.
Yeah, and that was also like a, man, the universe really has it out for us today kind of a
moment
there.
That's what Hornibrook does. Like, that's So
I that's true. Like, he's got like the over 8 yards in attempt this year. Like, the guy's like, when he's not throwing it to the wrong team.
Well, that's so what he does is he throws very, very well into coverage all the time.
Yeah.
So if he's throwing into coverage and he's dropping a dime, well, then that's why they're so good on passing downs, because it don't matter.
Yeah.
But that's also why he gets picked off so much, because he's just like, well, I can probably do this.
Yeah. He does not have an NFL arm, but he's trying to hit NFL windows.
Anyway, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence in Ann Arbor downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
All right.
So, like, they're up like 200 to 100 in yardage most of the way through this game. Peters goes out, and then Hornibrook starts dropping.
That it's not like that
and
anymore.
And then the defense just kind of like checks out, and I'm like, I've seen this before.
Yep.
I've seen this before when Devin Gardner was getting blasted by Michigan State, and the defense does a really good job for three quarters, and then in the final quarter, they don't have the depth. They've been out there too long, and they finally crack.
Yeah, I mean, we've got all these pictures of the team standing around as Peters is down on the field, and every one of them looks like their dog just died. And that was just kind of like, yep, like everybody knew it. That, and it's tough to blame them given how the season has played out to this point. but it was just like, well, we're boned.
Yes, and they were boned. They were so boned.
They were very boned.
My main takeaway from this was, I said, holy shit, TJ Edwards.
That guy's really dang good.
So they've got these two power plays that they've set up, and it looks like they're going to go some distance, and Edwards manages to knife pass. I think it was Ruiz both times. So you've got a freshman against a guy who looks like an All-American to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's it doesn't go well. And part of that is the fact that Ruiz is
a true freshman.
And he hasn't gone up against a guy like Edwards before, but those, like, just that ability to just, they call it get skinny through the hole and just turn your body sideways, manage to, like, scoot through a 300-pound human without getting blocked and then get to the feet of the running back. I mean, there's a reason that S&P has them as the number one defense in the country. I think they might be number three.
They were number one heading into this game.
So their rush defense was only 25th, so I thought Michigan might be able to do something. Not so much.
No.
Kind of a downer after a solid
deep mashings solid against
month
that
and
opponent,
a half of clubbing people. And we'll see how much of that is those one guy plays where Michigan isn't able to carry it off, or how much of it is a total lack of respect for the passing game. I mean, we saw Peoples-Jones get hit on a deep route finally.
Yes.
He was wide open on another one that they was missed. So, like, they could have thrown to Donovan Peoples-Jones on every first down, and there wouldn't have been a safety within a mile of him.
Yeah, to be honest, I was openly advocating for, once John O'Korn came in, to just arm punt it to DPJ every down.
There probably would have been safeties back at
that point. I'm assuming at that point they would have figured it out, but
but Wisconsin,
I still think it would have been their best chance.
Wisconsin was willing to just, like, have everybody at the line of scrimmage and put hoodie guy on Peoples-Jones.
And just dare Michigan to try to connect there.
And they couldn't do it enough. Yeah. And that threat, I mean, part of that is the fact that it's hard to complete downfield passes. Part of it is that Michigan's pass protection remains horrendous.
Yeah.
And I don't know why exactly, but Michigan can't pick up a stunt to save their life. The Brandon Peters hit was a guy stunting past, and Patrick Kugler didn't pass anybody off, and Ben Bredesen wasn't in position to pick up the guy that Kugler could have passed off.
Yeah.
Earlier in the game, it looked like Caron Higdon had a pretty good blitz pickup, but Kugler came off his guy and turned that into a chop block. And
yeah.
Cesar Ruiz is
and that's
not...
That's been a recurring issue this year. Michigan's picked up a few of them now.
And Cesar Ruiz is not in position where he can, like, move and cut off the other guy. So that guy comes through and sacks. So you have a sack chop block double feature there.
Not ideal.
No. And this has been happening all year, and I don't remember it happening last year, and I think that's because Mason Cole was the center, and Patrick Kulik was not the center.
I would agree there. I've definitely gotten the sense that line calls have been somewhat of an issue, and also just general protection on the fly stuff has obviously been a problem, and that a lot of that tends to come back to the center because that's the guy figuring everything out for you.
Yeah, and Michigan's like they have a third and six kind of on I think their second drive, and they get sacked on that, and Juwan Bushel-Beatty doesn't get an offensive, not an offensive, an outside linebacker who has like six sacks on the year, who surprise rushes on third down, but he's got a guy to block.
Yeah.
So if he moves out and he takes that guy, then the off,
then the guy with a more direct line to the quarterback hits him.
Right, and then someone on the left side of the line isn't blocking anybody. And yeah. To me, that looks like a line call.
Yeah, you missed a slide protection there. I think that's pretty obvious.
Or just you didn't identify what Wisconsin was going to do.
Yeah.
And you. So you have a guy with a free run, and then someone on the interior is blocking nobody on a blitz that wasn't disguised, really.
No.
Like it's
guy
not,
lined up on the end of the line and ran at the quarterback.
Right, like one of their top sack guys on third down showing that he's going to rushes, and Michigan doesn't pick that up. I think you see maybe why it took so long for Kugler to get in the starting lineup, and I think the reason that he's still in the starting lineup is Michigan has no alternatives.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put Cesar Ruiz out there.
Yeah.
He's a true freshman. He's been playing guard. Like, he's a center in the future. I don't know if that's going to be better.
Yeah, especially if the problem is getting everybody lined right and picking up stuff on the fly. I mean, we've seen Ruiz has some problems picking up stuff on the fly because he's a true freshman.
Yeah.
And
just one very memorable
incident.
Yeah,
I mean, this is extremely memorable. But, I mean, considering that's kind of the thing they're trying to avoid at all costs right now.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of is what it is at the moment.
Yeah, because the sacks that Peters is suffering are maximally damaging sacks. It's not like he's moving up in the pocket and he gets hacked down from behind and it's, you know, second and 11 and he's fine.
Yeah, you know, he's taking brutal shots.
Yeah, because it's just
I know people were complaining about Van Ginkel's hit being borderline. I didn't really see that. I just think you shouldn't let a guy get a free sprint up the middle to hit your quarterback.
No, I didn't think that was an illegal hit. I just thought that kind of drove home how ridiculous that Colin Mohurst was earlier in the year.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That was why I was like, because...
Oh, yeah, but there was that wasn't directed at you. That was directed to a large portion of Michigan Twitter who thought that was an illegal hit, which...
Well,
I get that it sucks that your quarterback went out. I mean, they were going on about him like driving Peters into the ground a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean,
Klatt
gave him a little bit of the extra business there, but that's football, man.
I mean, I don't know what he's gonna do like once he's hit the guy that isn't good. I mean,
you're taking him to the ground,
right? Like he hits him really hard, and then stuff happens from there. And the solution there is
you don't have time to like grab a few pillows and put them under him and be like, here is your soft landing.
I mean, the announcing does kind of set that stuff up because Klatt talks about it. And so
they do. And the announcing was a little bit uneven on Saturday. I normally like Klatt, but I thought they were a little bit off.
I do too. But he had a couple of moments where I was just like, come on, buddy. Really?
Yeah.
So here we are. It's 11 games in. We're looking at Ohio State playing John O'Korn. And audible sigh reads the transcript of our very visual podcast. I guess that was audible.
Yeah.
Our very audible podcast? No, that doesn't make sense. That's crazy.
Yeah, who would have an audible podcast?
Stupid. People like us. Anyway, so I mean, here we are. You've got a freshman starting at right guard. You have two top receivers out for most of the year. You have a freshman starting at wide receiver. You have a redshirt freshman who's Michigan's top tight end. You have a redshirt sophomore who's Michigan's number two tight end. You have a redshirt sophomore who's Michigan's number three tight end. You have no tackles on the roster. I mean, the offense does suck.
I was about to say next year is going to be great, and then the tackles thing came up. But they still might be able to figure that out. They got some bodies.
I mean, yeah, they've got some options there.
But, man, this year.
Well, what are you going
to
do?
This shit just came together in a way that it's tough to overcome everything that happened.
I think I underestimated the loss of Chesson and Darbo, but I also wonder if that would seem so severe if Tariq Black was still around.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd still notice it a little bit because Tariq Black's only one guy,
yeah.
And the problems go well beyond one guy. And he is also a freshman. I mean, we saw some freshman things with him.
I know, but he was pretty good.
But he was quite good.
But, I mean, the original sin of this offense is they can't pass protect to save their lives.
Yeah.
And some of that goes back to the fact that, you know, they don't have ideal pass protectors at right tackle. Juwan Bushel-Beatty actually has kind of solidified himself. Like, I don't think he's good, but, you know,
yeah, he actually, 247 posted some PFF grades, and he posted his highest pass block grade of the season in this one.
Which was what?
73.2.
Okay.
not tremendous.
One, good for him.
He honestly also posted his lowest run block grade of the year, but let's move past it. Wisconsin's good.
So he's kind of solidified into a guy who's an all right right tackle as a pass protector, but obviously not ideal. Cole's not ideal, but I think it just goes back to the fact that nobody knows what they're doing. And I think that goes back to the fact that I wonder if Michigan had to do it over again, if they would leave Mason Cole at center and just see what happened. Because if you're playing Andrew Stuber out there, if you're playing Steven Spinellis maybe, and you still have a carryover from the center and obviously the smartest offensive lineman on your team, does this look a lot better? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that it's just impossible to tell.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, once you commit to going in a certain direction, you can't – reversing course in the middle of the year isn't gonna solve much.
No.
We saw under Borges how that went.
No, I don't think that they really could have changed direction. And I thought – I mean, as soon as last year ended and Newsom went out, oh, God.
Just keep coming back to that one.
The worst possible injury for Michigan to have is a 2-year injury to a starting left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Man, that just bummed me out.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, people keep bringing up that we're, like, throwing out excuses, but, like, man, like, you look at how things have played out and...
Well, I mean, we've...
I mean, think of the ripple effect from Newsom's injury. Because, I mean, that doesn't happen. Spate may still be upright. Peters might still be upright. Like,
yeah.
These things happen, and it's not helpful to overlook them. We've also discussed how the pass protection is not good, and the play calling hasn't always been ideal. There was the 3rd and 10 play action in this game. That was like, why are we running play action?
Oh, God, there was – they had like a wildcat they were going to run on 3rd and 8.
Yeah, and they like had to call a timeout to avoid delay a game, and I was like, thank God.
And then they ran like a toss pitch.
Which also didn't work. But, yeah, so I mean like there are problems that go beyond the stuff that, you know, we've been talking about that's kind of set up this season for potentially being a rebuilding year or a disappointing year or whatever you want to call it, but that other stuff's still there. I mean,
the Wildcat stuff just blows my mind because there's nobody in the backfield, and it's a shotgun empty. And
yeah.
They have Chris Evans back there against, you know, a top rush defense, and like, what did you expect that was? What was the idea there? Like... Just
I don't know. I have no idea.
But. Like, it's one thing if you've got like the full Wildcat package where there's a guy who's taking a jet sweep or not taking a jet sweep, and you've got a bunch of guys who can do some blocking, but going empty and telling people that you're going to run is it's kind of inane.
A little bit, yeah.
But at least they stopped after they'd burned two of their three first-half timeouts trying to get that stupid thing to go.
Yeah, that was not ideal.
I mean, there was a lack of stuff. So Wisconsin scores a touchdown on that reverse that they block very, very well.
Yeah.
And the defense is completely screwed because – Hudson's actually coming back to defend that, but they have a blocker for him. They have a kick-out guy, so it's not like a a reverse that isn't blocked and you're hoping that the guys bite on it, it's a reverse where they have blockers for everybody,
yeah,
including the safety. So Michigan had a reverse of their own that was not like that, where they had they managed to get 10, 15 yards off of it, but they didn't have it blocked to the safety. They didn't have it blocked to the cornerback, really. So, like, they've had a month to, like, prep stuff, and I didn't really see very much. I think I did detect, like, some various tweaks on the ground that simply didn't work because Michigan couldn't execute it. So we'll see if that's the case when they actually do the UFR. But I was expecting a little bit more in the way of fireworks. Maybe not 80-yard fireworks, but, like, 15-yard, that's a nice play, that's a screen that we got them on kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you got to wonder how difficult it is for them to insert new stuff into the playbook when you've had three different quarterbacks this year, the third one being a redshirt freshman, and you've had issues on the offensive line, and you're that young on the offensive line. You know, they were still getting down the basics as recently as a few weeks ago. And then, I don't know, maybe expecting them to be able to bust out a bunch of extra stuff for Wisconsin, Ohio State may have been a little bit too optimistic. Because that's a lot of personnel change and that's a lot of youth. And we're already talking about a team that's been working with a limited playbook ever since Spate's gone out.
And was working with a limited playbook even when Spate was in there because they couldn't pass restrict to save their lives.
Yeah, that too.
So they were probably even worse than that. I mean, they were 121st in adjusted sack rate.
Yeah, it's real bad. Yeah.
And Wisconsin was bad, but they're like 95th bad. And, you know, these things are like, they're bell curves. And once you get a couple of standard deviations below the mean, the amount worse you are than the next, than like a team 10 or 20, 20 units up is more worse. Worse.
Yeah, I mean, I hate how much we keep harkening back to the Gardner-led offenses, but you can see that difference right there where you go from an offense that might be able to function if you game plan around it to just like no matter what you do, things are going to be broken.
Yeah, and we've lost two quarterbacks this year.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if Peters could go against Ohio State, because even if that is a concussion, which seems like the best-case scenario.
That was a bad one.
That's the kind of concussion where it's like, see you in spring practice, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, rest up. So I mean, and it really is like, I think the most disappointing thing about that injury would be if he's not able to be a full go in spring practice, because that'd be an incredibly valuable period of time for him to get basically another camp in.
Yeah.
And prepare him for being a multi-year starter. So hopefully he heals up quick.
Yep, so there we are. That's the offense. Getting people killed on the reg. We'll take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlet, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
We're bound to wait all night. She's bound to run them up. Invested in nothing at any height. To each his own. The garden's sorting out. She curls her lips on a bow. I don't know if I'm dead or not. If you ain't.
We've already kind of mentioned this in the opening section, so this might be a little bit of a shorter one, but Michigan dominated this offense until it was 10-7 in the middle of the third quarter, and Hornibrook starts throwing inch-perfect passes against great coverage.
Yeah.
And they also get the benefit, of a couple of terrible pass interference calls. There's one against Metellus early that's not catchable at all.
Yeah.
And then there's one against Tyree Kinnell, and this is the one where Klatt's like, yeah, that's a good call. And live, it looked like Kinnell had kind of yanked the guy back.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the replay, Kinnell isn't even touching the guy.
No.
Like he like gives him a little bit of a tiny shove as he goes by, and then it looks like the guy like fakes it. Like he yanks himself. I don't know what happened there, but that was an extremely questionable
call play
on third down,
yeah,
which would have kicked Wisconsin off the field and prevented the touchdown drive that they had to go up 14-10. And then the other thing that happens at 14-10 is Brandon Peters goes out and the air goes out of Michigan's balloon. So at that point, the running, like at some point, he had like 111 yards on 17 carries, and I couldn't believe it because Michigan had just been stuffing Jonathan Taylor the whole day.
Yeah.
Although I guess a couple of those were Bradrick Shaw. And Hornibrook keeps throwing dimes, and on one of the big one that actually sets up their first touchdown, it's a slot fade against Jalen Kelly-Powell, who is not LeVert Hill.
Yeah. I mentioned that, like, in the game recap. People were like, excuses! And it's like, well, you replaced one of the best cornerbacks in the country with a true freshman who came in who's already played three different positions this year.
Well, I mean, that's not really about playing those positions. It's about running fast, and he obviously had an issue there.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, you know, you're talking about a true freshman, former safety, getting used to playing man coverage up there, and he's not LeVert Hill.
Yes. I mean, I do find it questionable because you have seen, like, Kinnell and Metellus get beat on those, but not like that.
No.
Like, he was beat by a good two steps there. And usually when Kinnell's getting beat, he's getting beat by a one-handed catch.
Yeah, he's grabbing an arm.
Right. And we saw Brandon Watson do a great job of that on a couple of other throws where...
Yeah, he had a nice game.
Where he's in such good position that the receiver has no chance to try to make a two-handed catch.
Yeah, I think Watson was targeted three times in this game, and the only completion was an absurd one-handed catch.
Yeah. God, I remember that. Yeah, where Hornerbrook has no window and he throws it anyway. And it's right on time. And the guy manages to like make a spectacular one-handed catch. And I'm like, hooray. This again.
Even though like Wisconsin's receiving core has been decimated. And
right. And they're running out like a 5'11 freshman. And he's like, oh, I can do this too. Hooray. And like that's like the weakness of the defense.
Yeah. Inch perfect balls getting caught with one hand.
I mean, there how many balls in this game? There must have been five or six where I thought there was absolutely no window for a completion, and you know, a defensive back swats at the ball. And
I mean, the touchdown pass up the seam, that did not have a big window to hit.
That one was – Klatt explained that one really well because, like, Metellus overcommits to the interior receiver because he – like, Michigan's dropping Devin Bush into the end zone on that play.
Yeah.
So he's actually got that area of the field. Metellus doesn't trust it, moves over on that, and then the – I guess the post – a wide receiver further out is open because Hudson is playing outside leverage. So that you're right. It wasn't a big window. I was surprised to see that happen when it did happen. But that was a good read and not like one of those throws to a guy who
is just blanketed.
Right. And I'm just like, how, I don't even understand. Possibly because I've been watching Michigan's quarterbacks play all year. And I'm just like, what is this Drew Brees crap you're throwing out here? Alex Hornerbrook.
He's the weirdest dang quarterback.
No, I mean, I figured him out. He throws very, very well into coverage all the time.
He's a pop gun gunslinger.
Yeah. Like, he throws a pick at Devin Bush's chest.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, no, it's not a pick six, and that was a correct thing. Because I was like, okay, we get a pick from Hornerbrook this game. We better make it count. We didn't make a count.
No, we didn't.
Same thing with the Zach Gentry completion down the sideline. I'm like, oh, that's got to be a touchdown. And I'm like, oh, it's not a touchdown. And then they didn't get any points. But they probably should have gotten some points. So, and then, you know, late in this game, Michigan's defense just can't hack it anymore. And disappointing, but I think we've seen this pattern before, and we know it's not really on the defense. It's on the fact that the offense can't move the ball at all for a whole game. And then their belief left them in a way that I don't know if I've ever seen, like, executed so powerfully.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, game's over. Well, we're going to play like it.
Yeah. I mean, it yeah. I don't know what to add to that.
Mm.
It just...
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It's tough to look at a box score where they rack up 8 tackles for loss and turn the ball over against Wisconsin and still just end up with, like, kind of a disappointing performance at the end.
I mean, they gave up, what, 17 points?
Yeah.
Facing a host of drives. Like, eh. And a lot of those points are garnered because, like, their quarterback is placing it into NFL windows.
Yeah, I mean, they don't actually give up any points until 3:30 left in the third quarter.
Yep.
After Peters has gone out.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Well, that's life. When was the last game that Michigan, like, got the breaks in and won that wasn't against Indiana or Northwestern?
Like, Michigan State 2012.
Really? That doesn't feel like... That was the Denard one, right?
Yeah. Maybe the Dilio power slide game?
Northwestern.
All right.
Notre Dame 2013. I don't even remember what happened in that game.
No, that was just Gardner being awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. There was also like the... Oh, yeah. No, it was the UTL game. With the Tommy Rees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's it.
Yeah.
When the other team just drops a football when they're in the red zone. you may have caught a break there.
Yeah,
but that's
but it happens all the time against Northwestern and Indiana.
Yeah, that was the first year I worked here.
Well, we've come so far.
We sure have.
All right, let's take a break and talk about something else.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURELENDING. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole. The old familiar sting, trying to kill it all away. But I remember.
Ace.
Yes.
I seek a hummus that will go well with lox and goat cheese.
I believe I have the hummus for you.
Oh, do you?
Lantana hummus has a cucumber hummus.
Oh, really? What are the details of this hummus?
It is made with white beans and edamame and topped with cucumber and dill. Which that sounds like it would go quite well with some lox.
Yes, that's a breakfast hummus if there ever was one. Now tell me, are there any cats in this hummus?
There are no cats in this hummus.
Well, that's good, because I don't eat adorable cats. Lantana hummus, the only hummus that guarantees no kittens in your hummus.
And where can you find this kitten-free hummus, Brian?
Well, Ace, you can check out all their flavors at LantanaFoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer.
There we go. Professionalism. Anyway. Podcasting. We're all over it.
Oh, man. It's weird that people, like, pay us to do this now.
It really is.
It's like, we used to just do it, and now people pay us to do it, and it's... I mean, it's pretty much the same podcast, which is the weird thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the part that's shocking, is we haven't really changed much. Other than that, we're now talking about kitten-free hummus.
Yeah, yeah. All right, a couple of special teams and game theory notes for this one. Some people were upset that Michigan didn't go for it on 4th and 6 on the Wisconsin 41 early in the game. And I was like, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, 4th and 3 I'd be up for, but 4th and 6 with this pass protection, maybe not so much. I mean, you do want Michigan to not punt it directly into the end zone.
That would have been nice.
And that's been kind of a hidden issue with Michigan all year, is that they're punting.
Robbins has been really inconsistent.
And when he is, I mean, he's not really getting a lot of depth, and there are some returnable punts, although the punt return touchdown was just a total fluke based on an uncalled penalty, and that'll happen, I guess. But, I mean, on the 3rd and 6 after the 4th and 6, Michigan gives up that ridiculous sack where the best rusher that they have on the field is totally unblocked.
Yep.
And that's kind of why I was like, And also, as I keep saying, when you play a game from the 1950s, you can make 1950s-style decisions.
Yeah, and Wisconsin was very much approaching this like that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with their play calling. They had several third-down runs that were just like, we're just giving up and punting and playing field position.
Yeah. And Michigan successfully played field position at the beginning of the third quarter.
Yeah, they had the field flip for quite a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are situations in which I think you should be that aggressive early in a game with a terrible offense, with an excellent defense, playing a game that you expect that first 1-20 wins. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but some after the punt return touchdown, someone's like, you told me that we shouldn't worry about the punt return thing. And I was like, what are you serious? But people are all in their feels on Twitter, man.
It's bad.
I just wonder what it would be like if I, like, unmuted everybody. Like, what would that have been like? Oh, my God. Ace is making a facial expression.
Like, it was bad enough as it is. I am up to almost 900 likes on me calling the fans the worst thing about the program. also, way more ats than I asked for.
you asked for no ats.
I said, don't at me. I'm up to 90 replies. People are bad at following directions.
Well, that's pretty much asking to be added.
Oh, I know. I knew what was coming, but there was a point yesterday where I no longer could keep it all in.
I mean, it's a crap year, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I don't know, like... I've had a hell of a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Just going to put that out there.
Yeah.
And
you got these jabronis clowning you on Twitter.
And, like, this is a thing where, like, I got into this because I love it. I got into this because I love Michigan football.
Yeah.
And this really is a thing I still do because I enjoy it.
Okay.
And I'm still pretty good at pulling things out to enjoy, even from, you know, things that aren't necessarily that fun.
Right.
And... At this point, the thing I dread the most is having to interact with people. And that sucks.
Just online.
Well, yeah, but it's like...
In person.
And it's really... And it's not all the fans, I would say. It's probably just a vocal minority. But,
oh, yeah. Think of all the people who didn't at you.
Exactly.
How many people follow you on Twitter?
It's like 24,000.
24,000. And on your...
And only 90 of them added me.
Right. Just think of all the thousands of people who know to shut up. And go do something else.
See, I mean, like, that's... And that's the thing that, like... I love those people.
Right, but we don't hear from them. No.
And we get the people who don't seem to understand that, like, you have a choice here.
Yeah.
You really do. Like, you can watch this game and be angry about it, or you can just let it go.
Well, you can watch the game, be angry about it, and then be like...
And then don't dump your feelings onto a stranger.
Like, right.
For the love of God, man, I don't know you. I did not ask for this.
Right, like, yeah.
Like, I know that I have a social media account where I will occasionally say how I feel because that is how social media works. It is not an invitation for you to dump all of your personal problems into my mentions.
If I cared about your feelings, I'd follow you on Twitter.
Exactly.
Mom!
uh, Well, other than that unfortunate familial turn.
No, I mean, she just doesn't have a Twitter account.
So. Yeah. No, I just...
She got to get one. She doesn't.
Also,
I don't think she listens to the podcast. I hope she doesn't.
But it's just like, you know, I keep having to catch myself from, like, writing the game recaps as, like, right. writing them for the worst fans.
Right, yeah. Like, bolded alter ego is, like, in our heads now.
So I'm sitting there deciding whether or not to mention that LeVert Hill missed this game and Jalen Calipari was in and gave up a catch. And that's a relevant thing to this outcome.
Sure.
But, you know, but people are going to be like, you're making excuses. And I'm not strapping on a helmet. I'm not running out there with the team. I'm trying to tell people what happened.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. This happened to me like during the Rodriguez days, I remember. Like they had like a split afternoon show. And I was on there for like 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I got like WTKA callers in 2008.
That was
and I remember
that was bad.
I remember like one day there was this guy who just ranting and he's like, you're making excuses. And I hung up on him, which I don't.
Good start.
I don't understand why more radio people don't do it. It feels amazing.
Yeah, there's a big red button there, man.
Hit the dump button. It's like, it's such a relief because he's gone. And then I was like, these aren't excuses. They are reasons. Like, Michigan has no upperclassmen on offense. That's a reason. And there's a reason that Michigan's offense is bad. We'll see if it gets better or it won't get better. But, you know, yelling at people on Twitter about it because they thought something different than you. Yeah, like I predicted 10-2 this season. I didn't expect Michigan's starting quarterback to go out.
Yeah.
I didn't expect the pass protection to be worse in the country. And I thought I was pretty accurate about everything else I said. But people focus on the
two numbers, wins and losses.
Well, no, they just focus on like the stuff that you like got wrong. Cause, like,
well, yeah, there's that too. But in I don't know. It bothers me, especially when it comes to us, because it's like, I think people are like we're supposed to be the analytical ones. Like, you follow us because we do the whole breakdown thing and going beyond the just like
yeah.
If you wanted to just like go look at a box score and scream at the box score, fine, go do that.
Oh, yeah.
But
there's a guy who...
like, we're the ones who break down every play and are trying to tell you things that other people aren't right. bringing. And it's like, do you want to hear it or not?
Our whole brand is we don't want to fire Brady Hoke until the Minnesota game.
Yes.
That's our brand. And then when we want to fire Brady Hoke, we want to fire him very passionately.
Yes. And for very specific reasons that you know.
But we always kind of like try to hold our water until, like, I mean, we were dumping on Tim Drevno earlier in the year. And I think it's hard to tell because of the pass protection, but like they've done some work on the offensive line and we'll see. And
yeah.
This isn't a point at which you can have like a riot in the fan base because he is Jim Harbaugh. He does have a track record and we're going to see if it works out and we're going to see if it doesn't work out. And if you're unhappy that you feel like it doesn't work out, I don't care. I've never cared. I never will care.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
We talked about this earlier in the season after the Penn State game, so I feel like we're just talking about it again. But, yeah, I mean, just chill out, man.
Yeah, like, I generally enjoy doing this job, and it's become a bummer that the part I dread is the games.
Didn't Mike Riley just say something like that? Like, the only problem we've had was the games?
Yes. No, I'm freaking Mike Riley now. Like, and it's...
Well, I didn't...
It's disappointing, because, like...
I just left Twitter after the first touchdown Penn State scored. I was like, let's not do this time.
Maybe I should just feel less obligated to live tweet, but...
Yeah, you don't...
But I also, like, I enjoy... Like, that's part of the game I enjoy, but then, like, you get this whole storm coming in.
Right,
it's like, well, this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah, there's a guy
it's a coping mechanism for me in part. Like, I enjoy, like, the back and forth on Twitter, and there's a lot of Michigan fans on there that are fun to interact with. But then there's, like, I need to, like, start using the muting things to just have, like, the people I follow show up or something, because otherwise it's just a mess.
Yeah, a lot of people saying must and can't. Like, yeah, we know.
Unacceptable.
Well, it's just like, oh, you can't take that 5-yard penalty. I'm like, we know.
Yeah, but he just did.
That's not analysis.
So,
that's just saying something happened that is bad.
Can't throw that interception. Oh. Can't fumble the ball.
Can't do that. Must. You gotta get some points here. Gotta. All right. We know how football works.
Yeah.
Like you get the points.
Eventually, you must score more points than the other team.
This has probably been the bitchiest segment we've ever done.
I'm cool with it.
Call that my mom.
I haven't gone that far yet.
For not being on Twitter.
Yeah.
I should never call anyone out for not being on Twitter.
We may or may not have cut a bit of this because I may have gone too far.
Oh, we cut it. Let's talk to Jamie.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. It's just wrapping up a football weekend in the Big Ten where we saw the average margin of victory at 23.2 points, and the seven losers only averaged 12.3 points per game. And both those numbers would have been more severe had not Nebraska piled on a bunch of garbage points when I guess none of us were looking. I think we were all making dinner, and then somehow they scored 20 points when it was 56-14, and that skewed those numbers, or they would have been worse.
Yeah, guess how many Big Ten games saw both teams get to 300 yards of offense?
Maybe just that one?
Just that one.
Yeah.
Big Ten! Yeah. All right, well, I guess we'll start with that one since we are kind of talking about it. Penn State 56, sure. Nebraska 44. This is, of course, a Nebraska defense that gave up an ungodly number of points to Minnesota last week. And they gave up an ungodly number of points to Penn State this week. I mean, there's nothing to learn here.
No.
There's nothing to learn.
No, it was 42-10 at halftime.
It was the
second
straight week.
At halftime.
Yeah. It was the second straight week they've given up more than 50 points. It was the third time in 5 weeks that they've given up 50 points. And under Riley, they have allowed more than 30 points 14 times. And this was also the second time under Mike Riley that they scored over 40 points and lost by double digits. In his first year, 2 years ago, they scored 45 and lost by 10 to Darryl Hazel and Purdue.
My God.
I don't think the Mike Riley era has really improved much from that outcome in 2015 to today.
Good Lord.
Yeah, their defense is atrocious. They are dead last in the Big Ten in yards per play allowed. They are 0.4 of a yard worse than Rutgers, who's in 13th place. They are a yard and a half worse than the dead middle of the Big Ten. And nationally, they're 103rd, one spot behind Coastal Carolina. Wait, and one spot in front of UNLV.
They're D1 now?
Yeah, they are. They made the jump this year. Made the jump.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. I mean, the good news for Nebraska is it kind of looks like the Florida search is centering on Chip Kelly. So yeah. Scott Frost will be out there and available. No? Who else is going to get him? Why would he go to Nebraska? I'm sorry, I'm arguing with someone who doesn't have
a... Yeah, wait. We've gone off the rails here.
I know. I'm like, what's going on here?
A very visual podcast. Arguing with people who don't have mics. Anyway, let's move on to the only thing that might match this game in hilarity, which is Brian Lewerke's stat line from the Maryland game. 2 of 14 for 20 yards, 1.4 yards an attempt. In a win! They won!
Not to bring up bad news, but it's the second time this year he's thrown for less than 100 yards and won.
And of course, we get the good version. Congratulations, us. Well, Max Bortenschlager returns and makes me wonder why he returned. I would go with Ryan Brand over 121 yards, 4 yards in attempt. But Maryland's offense got completely shut down, 200 yards of offense. They score one touchdown. Michigan State scores, I guess, two.
Yeah.
And a field goal.
Yeah.
But, like, man, what happened to, like, the guy who was flamethrowing Penn State's defense for 400 yards?
You know, I think, well, the weather was terrible. And also, they got off to a 14-0 lead. They got off to a 14-0 lead kind of, like, early in the second quarter. And, like, they knew that that was going to be enough to win the game. So I think they just sort of turtled it. They ran the ball over 50 times. And so they take this 14-0 lead. The next 10 drives combined of the game ended with 8 punts and 2 fumbles. And finally, Michigan State kicked a field goal late in the third quarter to go up 17-0. But when they went up 14-0, it seemed like it was insurmountable. I mean, Maryland only averaged 2.4 yards per play and 9.3 yards per drive during the game's first three quarters. And God, getting back to that Lewerke stat line, he went 43 plays in between completions.
My God.
So he had a completion on the third play of the game, on the Michigan State's third offensive snap of the game. And didn't complete a pass until 43 MSU offensive snaps later.
That's not actually what I said, oh God. What I said, oh God, about is that there are two worst quarterback stat lines in the league this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, so, let's see. One of them was probably the Illinois quarterback.
Yes. Chase Crouch goes 4 of 14.
The other one was probably Demery Crouch.
Yes,
we have crazy bad numbers on him later in the podcast. Oh,
yes, man. Let's talk about that game. So a week after putting up like 600 points on Nebraska, Minnesota and Northwestern play. Northwestern 39, Minnesota 0.
Oh, my God. I just looked across that line.
Demery Croft, 2 of 11 for 43 yards. That's a healthy 3.9 yards an attempt. Much better than Brian Lewerke.
But.
Except he threw 3 picks on 11 attempts.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oof. That's a pretty high interception rate, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, so this is actually more surreal than Lewerke. Minnesota, on their first offensive snap of the game, hit Rashad Still down the sideline for a 36-yard pass, rather. By the way, that was Still's second catch of the year. The rest of the game, Croft only threw for 7 passing yards and had those 3 aforementioned picks, like you said. That was their offense. After that play, they only gained 32 yards on their next 20 plays in the first half. And, you know, they obviously just never got anything going. I mean, McCrary and Rodney Smith ended up with decent numbers, but
both lost fumbles.
It was far too little too late.
Yeah, this is a 5 turnover game. Northwestern puts up 39 points and Clayton Thorson gets 86 passing yards. It's that kind of game.
Wow.
Justin Jackson has 31 carries. It's that kind of game.
For 166 yards. You need to clarify with Justin Jackson, because that could be 31 carries for 31 yards.
That's true. No, it'd be like 31 carries for like 68 yards.
Yeah.
Not quite nice.
32 of Minnesota's 49 plays went for 3 yards or less.
I just don't understand. Like, they were okay. They weren't great, and they had Connor Rota passing for like 7.5 yards an attempt. He's healthy, I think, and they made the switch to Croft, and Croft is a total disaster. And
yeah,
and Rota is just a bad quarterback. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah,
I don't understand how they could make the switch or stick with it.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't really have that many options, and you know, and keep in mind, Rota wasn't even on the team for most of the offseason. They sort of convinced him to come back to play this year as a walk-on.
Oh. Maybe he's just...
Maybe that's why?
Yeah, maybe he's just like, I'm out, but guys, see ya.
This doesn't look fun anymore.
Like ace on Twitter.
He played pretty well. You remember those garbage points and garbage yards they got in that Michigan State game? You know, a lot of people I noticed were writing stories that week that, hey, you know, PJ Fleck, you know, finally has his quarterback. Look out! And then obviously, it's been a total disaster, save for that one game against the worst defense in the league, Nebraska.
Oh my God, I still can't believe that.
Yeah,
you just reminded me that this Minnesota team put up like half a hundred against. That's unbelievable. This is a game that I would probably just say, let's not talk about it, but I know that you're going to force us to talk about it. Indiana 41, Rutgers 0. So say what you want to say about this mighty victory
quickly
for the Hoosiers.
This was a mighty victory. You know, Indiana is second in the nation in forcing 3 and outs, and they kicked Rutgers off the field, 3 and outs, their first 3 drives. They answered with 17 points, and the route was on. It's Indiana's largest margin of victory in Big Ten play since they beat Northwestern 42-0 in 1990, my freshman year in college. And it was their first Big Ten shutout since they beat Michigan State 10-0 in 1993, my senior year in college. I can't remember if I was at either of those games, but, you know, hey, great. Good for them. They
I think that entire segment gets a Big Ten.
Right. They beat, you know, you probably didn't notice this, but Rutgers had the most Rutgers play after their first 3 and out. They are punting the ball, or I'm sorry, Indiana doesn't go anywhere on their first drive. So they have to punt the ball away as well. And Rutgers, their punt returner, I mean, he tried to catch it like he looked like a freshman in high school, and it bounced right off the shoulder pad, right into an IU punt gunner. And they had the ball first and goal at the 5-yard line. Easy touchdown. And the route was on from there, and it sets up a pretty important Old Oak and Bucket game next weekend.
Why is it important?
Because both teams are 5-6, Brian, and the winner goes to a bowl game.
Also probably the loser. Because they had
The loser is hating life. But Indiana has won 4 Bucket games in a row, and they've never won 5. So there you go.
All eyes will be on the Old Oak and Bucket next weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely, for sure.
Purdue 24.
Hopefully it's Jeff Brom's only old hook and bucket game, right?
Purdue 24, Iowa 15, speaking of.
Yeah.
Iowa continues its inexplicable devolution from the 55-point outburst against Ohio State by gaining 250 yards against frickin' Purdue. Purdue barely exceeds that total in a rock fight of a game, but Iowa has two critical turnovers, providing the margin. Akram Wadley rushes for 3.5 yards a carry against Purdue. Brian Ferentz is a crime against humanity.
Yeah. This was, I mean, Iowa punted on 7 of their first 8 drives. I feel like I write that down in my notebook every week. The two keys to the game, other than what you focused on, was that Purdue's wideout, Anthony Mahungo, they came out in the second half. Yeah, Mahungo. They came out in the second half and just found something. Sindelar and Mahungo, they had 127 receiving yards on the first two second-half drives, plus he drew a pass interference. This is very similar if you go back to that Michigan State game where they fell into a 14-0 hole because their cornerbacks couldn't pick up Felton Davis, and then finally they put Jackson on him and they kind of shut that down. They couldn't pick up this Mahungo guy coming out of halftime, and it turned a 9-7 lead into a 21-9 deficit. And I mean, Iowa down double figures is they're just toast. They can't come back from that. And the other second key, and it's the total, like, football is stupid stat of this game. Purdue somehow had 6 sacks, even though they are in the bottom third of adjusted sack rate on defense, and just, you know, in all 3 categories, on standard downs, on passing downs, adjusted sack rate. You know, they really haven't been putting pressure on the quarterback all year. They somehow got 6 sacks yesterday, and they killed 2 drives on third down sacks. And in the second half, Iowa tried throwing on first and second down, and Purdue wasn't having any of it somehow.
Yeah, I tuned into the end of this game because there was nothing else to watch.
Okay, yeah,
I guess
it was the only good game in the 3:30 window.
And what drove me nuts is, first of all, so Iowa's down 15 towards the end of the game.
15?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They scored.
Yeah, 24-9.
Yeah, 24-9. Score a touchdown. And Kirk Ferentz makes the correct decision to go for 2 early.
That's right.
Believe it or not, Matt Millen does not grasp this concept. And then the announcing crew continues to talk about how inexplicable decision this was because, oh my God, they didn't make it and lost the game. Even though they haven't quite pieced together that if they didn't make it on the other time, that also loses you the game and gives you no chance to go for the onside kick that Iowa took.
Right.
But so not only does the play-by-play guy and not so shockingly Matt Millen just completely not get this, they then, after the game, throw it to the studio where every single one of those guys also gets it wrong while also saying Mike Hall says out loud exactly why you go for it early.
Right.
He's like, maybe they were thinking, you know, if you don't get it, you still have time to go for the onside kick, and then still decides that it was the wrong decision. It drove me nuts. It's like, how can you be so bad at just math and logic and football? And, like, this comes up fairly often.
It does.
Like, how do you not?
I don't know.
Like, how is that not an ironclad rule at this point?
I don't know.
Like, the chart says to go.
I don't get it either.
But, like, and just like BTN, when you're getting out game theory by Kirk Ferentz, man, that's not good.
So it's Ferentz, you know.
Shoot.
Like, you're the enunciator.
Well, I'm getting so upset that I'm losing my ability to enunciate because the BTN is just so.
Right. Can you say Mahungo?
It's Mahungo.
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 Anthony Mahungo.
Anthony Mahungo.
But I can't get Ferentz.
You can't get Ferentz right, yeah. That's okay. We all have weird things.
So, win.
Who's a good.
Shut up.
Good win for Purdue. I feel like they dropped a couple games that they should have won. They almost were kind of becoming an in-season disappointment. But so on the Iowa side, so next week it's the soon-to-be no longer traditional Nebraska-Iowa game the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, God.
Do you think Iowa fans are going to watch that game jealous that Nebraska gets to change their coach?
I don't know. I mean, they beat Ohio State this year, right? Like,
that's true.
I'm fascinated to see what
that's
happens.
True,
with
but
the
other,
Iowa
other than
offense.
That, though, man, they can't score 2 touchdowns in a football game outside of that game. And that,
yeah, but they're playing Nebraska.
We're going to be talking about that outcome like years from now. Like, that's the weirdest Big Ten game in the last 10 years.
They're playing Nebraska.
It's up there.
They're playing Nebraska. Nathan Stanley is going to rush for 200 yards in this game. Like, completely on accident. Like, it's going to be a screen, and he's going to fumble the ball backwards, and he's going to run 80 yards untouched for a touchdown.
Well, they should try it, because a week ago, Demery Croft, who we just raked over the coals, had a 73 and a 65-yard touchdown run, and they didn't touch him on either of those plays.
Right, so this is actually a fascinating matchup.
Yeah.
I can pull a reason to watch that game out of my butt. There
you go. Friday after Thanksgiving, you know, it's the feature game, guys.
Either that or anything else. Your family.
Yeah.
Well, go football, I guess.
I would choose my family over Iowa, Nebraska.
You called out your mom earlier this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, not like seriously. I'm not seriously calling my mom.
What was your mom doing? Was she in Aces mentioned?
Sort of. I mean, that was kind of the topic.
That was kind of how that came about.
Up in his Menchies.
Oh, man.
Ohio State 52, Illinois 14, and that's all we're going to say about that.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt.
Whatever. Love you, Smith. No.
I guess I don't.
Yeah, no, why are we saying more things? No more things.
We're got it. We're just – so what happens here is there's a tiger over there, and if we're not looking at it, it doesn't exist.
Right, exactly.
All right, so that was some Big Ten football. Thank you for joining us, Jamie. We will talk to you at some point in the future.
Sounds great, guys. Everybody have a good and safe Thanksgiving out there.
Thank you for listening to the MCO podcast. I am Ace Amador, along with Brian Cook. Mahungu.
Better than us.
Nobody.
BTN, when you're getting out game theory by Kirk Ferentz, man, that's not good.